Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. Today's Wednesday, February 7th. I'm your host, Stephen Overly. And for now, I'm still human. But as you've seen, more and more newsrooms are starting to be disrupted by, and even embrace, generative artificial intelligence. But it's not without a whole lot of tension. Should AI developers pay to train their models on news articles? Can bots perform journalism jobs better than humans? Can AI help to resurrect local news outlets facing demise? Those questions are being asked in newsrooms, committee rooms, and courtrooms right now, with no clear answers. And still, many newsrooms are embracing the technology anyway, assembling their own AI teams or partnering with tech firms. The New York Times, Semaphore, Associated Press, even Axel Springer, Politico's parent company. Mark Lavalle tracks how technology is reinventing the news business as a director at the Knight Foundation. Knight is a well-known brand in media, funding journalism education programs and efforts to save local newsrooms. And before Mark joined the foundation, he spent over a decade at the New York Times, overseeing developers and product strategists. On the show today, Mark tells me why he thinks journalists demanding pay from AI developers is a dangerous game, and why there's a future where bots play a much larger role in the news you see. Mark, welcome to Politico Tech.
Thank you for having me.
A growing number of newsrooms right now are embracing AI. I read about two more just today announcing partnerships. But at the same time, when you talk to many in media, there is this view that AI is an existential threat to the industry. I wonder how you would describe this moment that the industry is in.
Yeah. Other folks have used this analogy as well, so I cannot and will not take credit for it. But AI as an approach to building things is such a wide-ranging label that it's almost like a bunch of news organizations getting together in the 1890s and trying to figure out what all the implications of electricity would be for journalism. And so I think one of the important things to do is really to start to try to find ways to break down that big existential angst that many people are feeling, which is not entirely misplaced,
right,
into the aspects that are more concrete, because it is something to pay attention to in so many ways, but it also does create so many different types of opportunity.
And so when you break down this kind of big topic for you, where do you start?
I start with really the consumer end of this, right? And that's twofold for me. A year ago, ChatGPT was the fastest product to hit 100 million users, right? And so the idea that everybody is sort of learning what these tools are and how to use them in so many different ways at the same time, you know, it's really this acceleration of a consumer product and an approach to doing things that is unprecedented. And then you can think about the ways that journalists use the same exact consumer tools to do their jobs that everybody else is using to write reports, you know, in school or all kinds of things. And then finally, you know, the thing that I think is most unique to our industry is ways that we can either build on top of these tools or use other tools for things that make sense for journalists to have or other folks in news organizations to have and use that are almost like sort of like enterprise scale that don't really make sense for everybody else as well.
It feels like we've kind of seen that dynamic play out with past waves of technology, right? Maybe this is just the news industry sometimes adapting a bit slowly, but we see consumer technologies take off and then newsrooms figure out, okay, how do we deliver news on these platforms or how do we incorporate these platforms into our journalism? I know you've been a newsroom leader through some of those waves of technology. Are there mistakes from the past that news organizations can learn from in the AI era?
The one-word answer to that is yes. I think a lot of us, not just in our industry, but you know, in pretty much any industry, tend to try to optimize for the prior crisis, right? So if you think about so many of the things that have been challenging in this era of social media platforms, it's easy to sort of look at what's happening with AI, and particularly, you know, a handful of large AI companies, whether they're established ones or things that seemingly felt like they popped up overnight. And say, oh, we need to approach regulation a certain way and all of these things, when in fact, what we could very well be doing is essentially trying to apply those hard-learned lessons from social media to a space that may have some similarities, but is much more likely to have a much greater set of differences. And so I think the other piece that's really important is that we apply fresh eyes to what those opportunities and threats are here.
One of those lessons learned, I think, from social media that you already hear conversation about has to do with how journalists are compensated for their work when it is distributed over other platforms, right? We went through this conversation with the arrival of Facebook and Twitter. And, you know, just last month, there was a hearing that the Senate held on AI and the future of journalism. One of the people who testified was the head of the News Media Alliance, who basically said, look, you know, newsrooms are not opposed to AI, but they do take issue with AI models being trained on their journalism and nobody paying for that. Is that one of the core fights here around AI and the future of journalism is just who shares in the profits?
To some degree. I mean, for me, I think a way to try to separate out having a clear understanding of what that exchange of value is and could be from trying to approach it from this very kind of protectionist mindset, right? So if you take AI to the picture for a second and you think about you're watching broadcast news channel and there's a chyron, a lower third at the bottom, you know, NY Times colon headline or Washington Post colon headline. They are relaying information that was a scoop of another news organization. And there's no money behind that, right? That there's an exchange of value there between news organizations where there's credibility and amplification and things like that. And so this idea that intellectual property is being used to train models and there are other, you know, ways that organizations get value. And I'm not saying that there shouldn't be any monetary exchange of value there at all whatsoever. But at this point in time, there is an opportunity to create entirely new consumer experiences that involve news and information. And I get that many of the folks who have been in this industry for a long time feel that the original sin of the internet era was making too many things too free for too long.
Right.
And I don't think they're entirely wrong about that. But I think starting this from a position of you've taken this that was on the internet and so you owe me X amount of dollars or you can't use it or things like that is a dangerous position to be in, right? That like this idea that news organizations are like owed by everybody else for every single way that things are used when they in turn build value off of fair use and things like that feels like a tricky, you know, reductive approach.
Do you see a need for any sort of policy solutions to address some of these questions around copyright and compensation? Or are we either not there yet or some of those questions may be overblown?
Where I sit personally is we are not there yet. That what really I think we need to see and understand is, and this may happen even in the next couple of years, given the current pace, what is that consumer experience of a regular person on a daily basis? And is that a direct relationship with a handful of news organizations where they are led there by way of, you know, essentially new gatekeepers? Is it something where for most of your news experience, you're not actually having that much of a direct experience with a news organization anymore? But you know, there's actually something that is more of a kind of full-on assistant that is presenting that information and reframing that information for you without knowing. Not to paint that as just one of two very different scenarios. It's probably going to be somewhere in between. In some ways, I feel like without knowing where that lands from that consumer desire perspective, right? What do folks actually want in this era of new capabilities? It's hard to say this is how we should set up all of the sort of scaffolding around that to make sure that everything happens fairly.
Most of our listeners are not journalists, right? So you and I can sort of nerd out on journalism, I'm sure. Most of our listeners consume a lot of news, though. What are the cool experiences that you think they might get when AI is integrated into journalism?
And it's funny because you can go back to the mid-90s and find folks who, you know, tried to envision these types of media experiences. And in some ways, I think they felt tantalizingly around the corner for a couple of decades now. And so maybe this is just one of these sort of moments of springtime where it feels like everything is possible again, and we'll see where it lands, or maybe this is actually the time. But when you look at the idea that you can have an experience that knows what you already know about a topic and what you don't know, and what you may need to come up to speed on something that other folks have been paying a lot of attention to, or vice versa, that you get just the latest updates, That's something that is more conversational, so that when you have those kinds of follow-up questions or things like that, instead of having to follow a hopefully perfectly placed link to another article that maybe answers the question, halfway down, you can just get that answer directly. And that if you don't believe something or you don't trust something, that you can kind of dig deeper to understand more of the veracity of where it's coming from. Like that kind of approach where it's still mostly about just consuming information, but you can kind of get what you need when you need it. I'm being kind of vague and, fluffy here, but there's something in that direction which feels pretty alluring.
I expected you to have some sort of answer about like robots or something, but maybe I'm just, your answer is, I think, much more practical in like how AI can actually be used to deepen the learning experience from journalism.
Yeah, the curiosity in our real lives, right? I mean, when we're doing 15 other things and, we're running to our next meeting and things like that, right? I think it's really about the user experience being built around the practicality of our lives.
We'll be right back. One topic we haven't touched on, and in some ways it's the elephant in the room, at least for, I think, a lot of working journalists today, and that's the last couple of months have been brutal in terms of job losses in newsrooms. I think including over 500 journalists were laid off in January alone. What impact will AI have on journalism jobs as it becomes more a part of the job that we do?
It's going to be messy.
An honest answer.
The two ways I try to think about this. So many of the decisions and the decision-making apparatus that exists in newsrooms is about filtering and prioritizing. And that working with and watching world-class editors make those decisions is one of the most amazing things about being part of this industry. That work that is largely invisible to the folks who benefit from it. But that also means that so many stories go untold and uncovered. And so if you start from a consumer perspective, that there is latent demand for understanding things that are happening around you, or whether that's in your community, in your area of profession or things like that, and that there's an opportunity for you to have that much higher amount of relevant information finding its way to you for the same amount of investment you put in every day in terms of time. There's this tremendous upside potential. And we will see organizations do the worst of what our fears are here, right? Of like laying off humans and replacing them with little content generating garbage bots. My hope is that the market for that is going to wane because the same sort of underlying enabling technologies used in the right hands, ultimately with humans involved, ultimately makes for a better, more relevant product.
I know that the Knight Foundation is very focused on local journalism, which, as you note, has been hit very hard. In particular, there's this coalition you're part of called Press Forward that is pumping $500 million over the next 5 years into local newsrooms to effectively try to save them. I mean, what is the role for AI in their future?
So it's interesting. There is this whole Press Forward coalition. It's 25 funders. Knight is one of them. And it is really about transforming the landscape for local. This is a five-year program. But it is really about, at the end of the day, the informed and engaged communities and, publishers, whether that's, again, a family-owned publication that has existed for 150 years or a local broadcast outlet or an SMS-based distribution channel for first-generation Americans in a city who speak Spanish. I view all those as publishers. They're doing the work of connecting folks in a community with important, relevant information. A lot of what we do at Knight Foundation is look at the local journalism angle of this, which has gone through its own tumult over the past 15 years or so. And the idea that a relatively small news organization in a community, a suburb or a neighborhood in a city, let's say, that can actually be focused on what's happening locally and have a handful of people working for it, but produce the volume of material that we think of in these sort of halcyon days of metro publications and things like that, but actually be kind of more of a full service operation that's covering things like high school sports and town council meetings and things like that, that folks generally show that they care about. There's that huge opportunity there where that makes folks more, I believe, this is sort of part of our hypothesis in the AI era, more likely to actually understand how those publications provide value to them and more likely to actually pay for them, right? It's harder to get somebody to pay for something that only publishes a few times a month. And up until basically this moment, if you are a small news organization, you're unlikely to be publishing with such a frequency that you're actually serving all of the needs of the community that you're trying to support.
As I'm hearing you talk and our conversation around sort of the role for humans to still play, the role for AI to maybe play in journalism, it kind of brings me to this question, which maybe sounds a bit trite at first, but I do mean it in a genuine way, which is there a future where much of the news that we consume is going to be written or delivered by bots?
I think so. In that, I think a good chunk of the experience you have, that direct experience you have, will involve decisions made by machines. Kind of in the same way that if a good chunk of what you get in your daily news routine is from social media, right? The algorithms are deciding which articles you see, which links you see, and which posts you see. And so in some ways, I think that that's already happening. You know, at the end of the day, you go to sleep, what's in your head about what happened in the world today or what, you know, what you learned today. So much of that is already determined, what you see and don't see by machines. I think that in that context, this is in some ways a next step. And there's a unique role for humans in this whole process that does not go away. This is not a sort of automation. It's augmentation. The unique role for journalists changes. But in what I'm not trying to be blind to the consequences of that when it comes to, you know, job loss and things like that, particularly in the short term. But I think it is also important to think about the full spectrum of opportunity when it comes to being able to then operate at a much larger scale. We don't have a great model for what that looks like yet. I think it's going to take a handful of specific examples happening over the next year or two for us to even start to see what that looks like. But that's where I have a reasonable amount of optimism that in the relatively near term, we're going to start to see, oh, that's what it means to do this in this era.
Well, Mark, I am going to now go think about how to protect myself and my job in the AI future and how to become indispensable in a robot journalism world. Thank you for being here on Politico Tech.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overly. See you back here tomorrow.